Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are now going to tackle what just happened, as we did yesterday in a broader sense, with the Congress passing this bill to keep the budget of the United States open, to keep the United States and government in business. And we're going to tackle that both, but in terms of what it meant for Native people, for what happened on the Apache land. And what happened there was that, pushed by Senator John McCain and this mining company, which we'll talk about, Rio Tinto PLC, that land was moved. 24 acres were part of the Apache ancestral and ceremonial lands were removed in a trade to allow this copper mining to take place. We'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about some of the statements made by U.S. congressmen calling Native people wards of the state, what that meant in a steeper sense, and later in the program kind of tying in all these things going on, including what happened with Greenpeace that permanently damaged an ancient Native site in Peru. Says a great deal about, as we talk about race in America, where the majority of population are when it comes to Native people in our world. So we're here with Terry Rambler, who's chairman of the San Carlos Apache Tribe, Mark Trahant, an independent print and media journalist, Mike McAuliffe, senior congressional correspondent for HuffPost. Joshie Ross joins us once again, member of the Black Tribe, father, writer, entrepreneur, attorney, and author of How to Say I Love You in Indian, among other books, and also a widely read columnist. Good to have the four of you with us. Welcome.
Morning.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Write me at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So let me start, if I could, with our congressional correspondent, just to talk about what happened in this bill, and then go right to Terry Rambler. Mike McAuliffe, welcome. Good to have you with us here in the first part of this program. So talk a bit about this vote that took place and what happened on these Apache lands.
Well, this is actually the defense authorization, and it's one of the two huge pieces of legislation.
Well, that's what it was, defense. Excuse me, I misspoke. Correct. Right.
But I mean, you know, they moved through these two giant pieces of legislation at the absolute last second, having added all kinds of provisions to them that no one really had a chance to look at, and they didn't tell anyone that they were actually adding the provisions. So that was one of them. And in this particular case, there were a whole bunch of land deals. Many of them had been sitting around for a long time, and they were desired and sought by politicians on both sides of the aisle. However, in this particular case, it's 2,400 acres of land in the Tonto National Forest, and it's being traded to a mining outfit called Resolution Copper, which is mostly owned by Rio Tinto. It's an Australian-English mining company that has the dubious distinction of sharing ownership of a uranium mine with Iran. So it's the sort of thing that's got that rather high-profile, unfortunate connection, but yet that was not enough to stop this. So it had been sitting there for years, many of these different things, and in order to get support for all these various packages, some of which environmentalists and conservationists like very much, but in order to get support for all of it, they put it all together, and then they attached it to the defense authorization, where you really don't think the land tax ought to be, but they added to that, and it ensured that it would go through without much opposition, although there was some objection to it.
And, you know, I was following this pretty closely, Mark Trahant. It's always good to have you back with us. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Terry Rambler's not with us. He'll be with us in a few minutes, who is chairman of the San Carlos Apache Tribe. And you've written some interesting things about what the politics of this are and what it says.
Right. In my column today, I wrote that this is really representing the old school Congress, where you have a last minute need to get legislation passed, so people just start tucking all kinds of secret deals into it. And things that would normally never pass through the light of day suddenly find an avenue for enactment. And that's probably the best argument against the old style of politics.
Terry Rambler, welcome to the program. Terry is chairman of the San Carlos Apache Tribe. Good to have you with us, Terry. Welcome.
Good morning. It's 9:08 a.m. in Arizona.
Good morning in Arizona. It's morning still here. We're not quite at noon yet. Talk a bit about what this decision to open this mining means. And the battle you've had around this.
We've had this battle for 9 years, going on 10 years now, and our main argument has been the freedom of religion for our people, because that land that's going to be exchanged, it's federal land right now in the Tonto National Forest that's going to be exchanged, about 2,400 acres, and it covers our sacred areas, our ancestral homeland. It's not part of our reservation, but it used to be our land until by gunpoint we were forced to the current reservation that we live on, where we were originally prisoners of war. And that's how that land is tied to us. It's the spirituality of that land. We have many sites in there where our people still go to pray, and we still have to this day ceremonial dances for our young ladies that become women. And we have our main source of diet, acorns. We'll go to pick acorns. And those acorns, just to give you an idea, the emery oak tree that survives in that area, it takes 100 years for one for its first acorn to produce. So that's how really valuable it is to us. And there's also medicinal plants in the area that have always healed us for since time immemorial. And that's why it's so important to us. And it's not only that, but it's the water resources in that area that's tied to everybody, not just us Apaches and other Indian tribes. It's tied to everybody that lives around that proposed land exchange site. Because here's what's going to happen. Resolution Copper is going to go a mile deep in that area. And once they go a mile deep, they're going to excavate one cubic mile of dirt and rocks and whatever else. But they have no plans to replace that, so there will be a giant hole under there. And if you can imagine this, it's equivalent to 1,400 Dallas Cowboys Stadium. That's how big that giant hole will be underneath.
Wow.
And those people that have not seen that area, there's gigantic boulders that sit on top of each other the way our Creator God made it to be. And that area sits at a higher elevation than all the other surrounding areas. So our elders have taught this, and also science proves this, is that God created that so that snow and rain could fall in that area, and then it could go down into our aquifers, feed all the surrounding aquifers. So when Resolution does this, eventually that land will collapse because there's no support underneath there. And once it collapses, it's going to collapse and leave a giant hole 2 miles in diameter, and that will forever alter that area. And nobody, no human being will ever make it the way our Creator God made it for us to be. And that's been the battle.
Terry, I'm rambling. I appreciate you that you laid it out in such detail for us. And before I turn back to Mike McAuliffe about some of the politics of this, Jossie, I'm glad you're with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, man. How are you? I want to just talk about what there's a depth to this. We just finished conversation in the last hour with many leaders locally around here in the black community dealing with issues of race and racism and how deep they go in the United States of America. But I just want to throw this out in the context of mindsets that don't hear Native voices or hear the Native world ever in this country. U.S. Representative Paul Gosar, who represents the district where this mine is and where the San Carlos and White Mountain reservations are, his quote was to Native people, "You're still wards of the federal government." Those exact words. They came out of Chief Justice Marshall, John Marshall, when he was Chief Justice in the 1830s, saying that Native people should be wards of the state. And we'll tell you what's best. Maybe in 1944, we gave you a law that said you're sovereign states, but it's only sovereign as far as we needed you to be sovereign. I mean, this is beyond the Apache lands. This is a major problem. This is a major issue.
You know, it is, and it's something that is a double-edged sword. And there are people who have, because along with that, wards of the guardian, because unfortunately that brought to light a truth that is embedded within our law, and that is that ultimately Congress has plenary power over our lands and our tribes, our tribal organizations. And that relationship is dysfunctional. It's based upon this bedrock of condescension. And we see that there is this willingness to resort to that in difficult times. But along with that, and this is the part I suppose that I, you know, kind of wanted to touch on a little bit, Mark, is that along with that comes a responsibility. That is that you can hear it in the chairman's voice and in his narrative about how important these lands are. And I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible for capitalists, for money people, to understand how significant our lands are to us as Native people, you know, these ceremonial lands. And that's fine. They're not supposed to, just like a white cop isn't supposed to understand the oppression, the vulnerability of black males in regards to racial profiling. And for those times when the conversations can't see each other's worldview, there's process laid out, right? That process is supposed to protect both those interests. And in this case, that process didn't happen. There's supposed to be a consultation anytime a tribe is affected by the actions of the federal government. And that process was not meaningful, nor did it happen. And that, you know, and so in those instances when process fails, as Americans, as Native people, as, you know, black people, as, you know, who are being subjected to tyranny of cops, we have to be able to rely on that process. And that's something that I think that we have to really look into, is why that process failed us when there is this special trust responsibility per Justice Marshall.
I wonder, you know, Mark McAuliffe, while you're here with us here, this first part of the program, before we go back to Mark Trahan and Chairman Rambler, can you talk at all about the conversations that did or did not take place around this in Congress before they put this in the bill and passed it?
Let me just
do one at a time. Let me go to Mike McAuliffe first from HuffPost, then we'll go to Mark Trahan. Mark? I mean, because they're both Mark. It's Mike and Mark. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
I got a chance to catch up with Senator Carl Levin yesterday. He's retiring. He was the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and that's the committee who moved the defense authorization. He did tell me that the last thing to get added to the package, and the reason it didn't move sooner, was because there was fighting over the lands package. So it was the final thing that was added to the bill. However, it wasn't necessarily that people were worried about doing something harmful to a Native American community. It was that they wanted their own things in there. And in fact, he said that if anything, if the land package had not been added to the defense bill, you probably would have a loss vote on final passage rather than gained them. So the folks in Congress were vastly more interested in getting their own little projects added. And some of them aren't so little projects. Some of them are quite large. But they were much more interested in getting their own piece of it than they were concerned about what happened in someone else's state. And as Senator Levin mentioned, he's aware that some Native Americans in Arizona might not be very happy, but both the state senators, John McCain and Jeff Flake, have been pursuing this deal for a very long time, and they wanted it. So his sort of opinion was, well, you know, I'm in charge of the defense part of it. The other committees who had these land deals wanted a way to get them passed, and if the various senators from their states were in favor of them, I wasn't going to object to it. So he suggested they should be mad at their senators, not necessarily at him or Congress.
So there was no real opposition, Mike McAuliffe, in Congress, even by Levin and the other Democrats.
No, very little. I mean, there was these bills, in particular the Arizona bill. It could not pass on its own. It came up twice during this Congress in the House, and they had to pull it twice because it lacked the votes. There were liberal opponents who didn't like the giving away the lands, and there were conservative opponents who thought that who didn't want the new lands that they got in return, and they also didn't like the Iran connection also. So it couldn't pass on its own, but when it was put in the package, there were far more supporters of it than there were opponents.
So I'm sorry, Mark. Mark Trahan, come back. I just wanted to get Mike, since he was in the middle of that, to lay that out.
Okay, I have to tell you, I'm apologize. I'm having trouble hearing the guest part of the conversation. So,
oh, I'm sorry,
if
Mark.
I repeat something, that's okay. Why. Just a couple of quick points. One, Representative Tom Cole did try to get this change in rules committee and was unsuccessful. And it's significant that he is both Republican and a member of the Chickasaw tribe, so he understands point of view. The second one is, at the same time this was all unfolding, as I mentioned, people were trying to slip everything in. I thought a process that worked fairly well, you can argue about the merits of it, but is the return of land to Sea Alaska Corporation in Alaska, which is one of the native corporations. And they had been promised back in 1971 the process of being able to select land, and there's been opposition in Congress from 1971 until today. And they were also able to use this process to get it resolved. The good thing, I think, what's a little bit better than the Rio Tinto deal is that it was pretty transparent. Senator Lisa Murkowski was very clear about what she was trying to do, and was as was the outgoing Senator Mark Begich. And there was more public transparency than there was with this Rio Tinto deal.
So Chairman Rambler, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say one other point on Rio Tinto. I think in some ways it may be a Perec victory because the market price for copper is part of this great natural resource deflation, and whether or not a company is actually going to be able to afford to do anything at this point, I think is becoming more problematic, and I think there'll be a lot of opportunity to try to block this through environmental regulations, making it too expensive to develop.
Chairman Rambler, I mean, so what does the Apache Nation do now? I mean, this company Rio Tinto is a huge multi-billion-dollar company. They've already sunk billions of dollars into this. So what do you do next?
Just before I answer that question, I heard somebody. I couldn't hear all the other parties on there. They kept going in and out. But I heard something about there was no opposition. Did somebody say something like that?
There was no opposition in Congress to this, in the Senate.
Let me clarify that. Okay, before I answer your other question, this bill, when it stood on its own, could not pass Congress for almost 10 years. Last year, 2013, even though the Republicans had the majority in the House, they still could not pass it. Two times it went to the House floor for a vote, and two times it was pulled at the last minute because they were afraid of an amendment that was introduced by Congressman Ben Ray Lujan of New Mexico, which would have excluded the sacred areas from mining in that area. And so they couldn't pass that in the Senate. Didn't go anywhere. So what happened is they added this bill along with over 100 other bills to the National Defense Authorization Act, a must-pass bill, making it practically impossible for people to even though in their heart and minds they knew this was not a good deal, they could not pass up the opportunity to pay our troops, to mobilize our defense across the world, and also the sweetener deals that they got in their own states too, and there's all these land packages, and so they made it difficult. They made it difficult, and the Apache tribe and all the other people that supported us, we were going through the regular legislative process, and we were winning. Then all of a sudden, they pulled us at the last minute, and Senator McCain and others make a deal on this, and which just really just took away the public interest determination of the American public, and they just did it themselves, Congress.
I think it shows the power of Rio Tinto and the other corporations who, in this defense bill and in the budget, what they were able to ram through.
That's what you just mentioned a while ago, a billion dollars of revenue from these two giant mining companies that formed Resolution Copper for the sole purpose of mining this area. And no matter what happens, even though people may be celebrating, I understand Representative Gosar, Kirkpatrick, and others are celebrating, that's fine. But with Apache tribes and all tribes across the United States and people that support us, we're not going to give up. One thing in our history that has
made us survive till now. 15,500 of us are left in San Carlos Apaches. One thing that has made us survive is the very essence of this fight, the power of prayer. And that prayer, the power of prayer, we have never, ever given up on that. And that's what's going to keep us going. That's what's going to lead us eventually to defeat the massive copper company, because even in spite of the odds against us, even in spite of termination on Apaches, termination policy or the relocation policy to assimilate us, to help us or make us forget about our language, in spite of all those obstacles, prayer is what got us through, and prayer is what's going to continue to get us through. And the ability, the freedom to pray is what brought people across the United States to our land, and we coexisted. We have a treaty, Apache Treaty of 1852. And here's one thing that I want everybody to know is that this history always repeats itself. When Congress gave us our original reservation land, they said, that will be your land. But what happened with the discovery of minerals and agriculture around in our outer edges of our reservation? By presidential executive order, they sliced our land 6 times. Because of minerals, there's mines all around us, and there's agriculture, farming all around us. Once, that was once the agriculture part of it is once what we had. That was our economic engine, but we were isolated politically, socially, economically, and we were left in the desert, barren area that nobody thought was worth anything. And so that's what it is here, the United States. When it promotes itself out there, it says democracy. It fights for other foreign countries' democracy. And yet, this deal, it's going to benefit. Rio Tinto has a relationship with the country of Iran. And there's also a relationship in there with the country of China. As this further develops, I think that's one thing that's going to really hurt the people that were supporting this, the congressional folks.
And I think that what you're describing here, Chairman Rambler, is what we were talking about yesterday in this program when it came to the bills that were passed in Congress, which was this kind of all-out effort that took place in these spending bills to ensure that certain interests, especially in mining and in oil and gas and in the financial districts of this country, to get their way in these bills, which took place. And one of those things that happened, as we're talking about now, which was happened on the Apache lands with this international corporation that has one of the most miserable records in the world for destroying homelands of people in New Guinea and Southwest Africa, in Southeast Africa and other places, to destroy their lands and kind of getting and people dying because of diseases over this all across the globe, and in trying to break unions. And this is the group we're talking about that Senator McCain and others have pushed this bill through. And I want to thank, first of all, thank you, Mike McCullough, for the work you do in HuffPost. I really enjoy your writing, and I look forward to having you back many more times in this program. We're going to come right back with Chairman Terry Rambler and Mark Trahant and Jossie Ross to continue this conversation right after this break. We are going out with a little Temptations, the way you do the things you do, because on this day, American singer and songwriter, co-founder of the Temps, Eddie Kendrick, was born in Union Springs, Alabama in 1939. Happy birthday, Eddie Kendrick. We'll be right back. Don't go away. You know you could have been some perfume. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. And I can tell the way you do the things you do. The way you do the things you do. As pretty as you are. Go down in now. Hey, baby, nobody know you when you're all done now. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Big Joe Williams. Nobody knows when you're down and out. He passed away on this day in 1982, the man who made the nine-string guitar famous. We are here with Chairman Terry Rambler, Chairman of the San Carlos Apache Tribe, and independent print and media journalist Mark Trahant, and Jossie Ross, member of the Blackfoot Nation, father, writer, entrepreneur, attorney, author of numerous things, great columns he writes, and his book that we talked about last, How to Say I Love You in Indian, 410-319-8888 is the number here. Please join us or write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Let me jump into this part of the conversation with you all and start with Jossie and go around the room. You know, I was thinking about everything that Chairman Rambler was saying and what you said earlier, Jossie, and I also read this article the other day about Greenpeace that may have permanently damaged this ancient sacred site in Peru by putting a message, time for change, the future is renewable, next to this hummingbird geoglyph in Peru that is thousands of years old and part of their native traditions in Peru. And the disconnect and how what we have to do as a nation to reconnect the notion of sovereignty, reconnect with people. I mean, we talk about racism in America. When we do this, we ever think of what's going on between the native world and the rest of this nation. And I think it's something that we have to begin to, as this explosion is taking place in America now, this has to be a piece of it. Because this between the Apache lands and this desecration, and the Greenpeace will not even talk about why they did it and who did it, and it's just such an obscenity, I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah. You know, that's, I suppose, the most insidious form of racism, right? When you won't even talk about somebody, when somebody's not even included in the conversations that affect them. And that's something that is, you know, explicit within that condescension that Justice Marshall talked about that is still continued to this day as a result of, you know, this tribes are to be seen and not heard. I mean, Peru, that's a slightly different situation. The racism and the very, very ugly privilege that's expressed oftentimes by, you know, sometimes very well-meaning white liberals is very real in Peru. I'm not taking away from that. However, I'm not as aware of the legal situation there, you know, vis-a-vis the legal situation here in the United States.
Where there is
absolutely, as a matter of settled law, a trust responsibility, a duty to consult with affected tribes. And so that's where, to me, in this particular instance, the privilege is so ugly because, you know, one of the things that there's these kind of bills, these whether it's a defense bill or an appropriations bill, these must-pass bills, right, they pass every single year. That part is not necessarily a huge shock to the system. However, every single year, something that takes away, there's not always a taking from a federally recognized Indian tribe, and that term is very important because with those federally recognized Indian tribes, there is this duty to consult with them, and as a result, even though they pass every single year, they don't, you know, the Congress does not have a responsibility, that special trust responsibility to everybody who they pass these bills about, you know, who's affected. And so are tribes supposed to be treated slightly different? Absolutely, unabashedly, because we are, as a matter of settled law, we are sovereign nations, domestic dependent nations, to use Justice Marshall's terminology, and that requires a certain code of conduct, the protocol when negotiating a taking or a transfer with these, you know, with our people. And so, you know, that part, that privilege that assumes that Native people are similarly situated to every single other American, and I'm not talking about, you know, individual Native people like myself or Mark or the chairman, but I'm talking about as a member of a federally recognized tribe, which was negotiated with by the United States, there's a political duty when you see us as a whole.
And so, Mark, before I turn back to the chairman, Mark Trahant, you know, one of the things I think that is one of the discussions that has to take place in America now to really make America understand and fight for the real notion of what sovereignty is supposed to be, because it seems like it is a name only.
Right. Well, and I think part of this
is I think it's really important to call out the modern environmental movement in America and maybe even globally, and that is that it's largely a movement of wealthier white Americans. And until the environmental movement is broader and it's able to hear more voices, they're just not going to get this right. They're tone deaf. And you look at this one in Peru, but you also look at the thing that I mentioned earlier about Sea Alaska and the transfer of land. They're afraid of Sea Alaska having access to that land because they said they'll clear cut or they'll cut too many trees. But why not work with the native groups and come up with, you know, and work within that system, but first acknowledge that it's native land. And because when you're outside of that and just saying natives don't have the right to run their own resources, that's the same as Congress taking land away for Rio Tinto. It's no different. It's just a different cloak.
So I you know, I think that this is, when you look at this in this broader scope, Chairman Rambler, I want to go back to what you were saying earlier. And I heard what you were saying about what's going to happen next, but is there going to be a legal resistance and another political resistance to what has just happened to your land?
There's going to be political resistance, and you know, we've gotten so many people that have come out of the woodworks on this that are going to support us, and so there will be, and we'll continue that opposition. You know, be strategic, and also there's always that opportunity to go to the court. So you know, we still have options.
Because I do want to go back to kind of the larger question of how this meets the larger community in America. Because I think that, you know, when we talking to a friend of mine just recently, you know, he was saying, you know, when you look at a native person from Wyoming, an old friend was saying, you know, look at TV, look at the news, look at the movies, that there is not, you don't see a native presence anywhere. It's just as if it doesn't exist, as if we don't exist. And I think that is part of the issue, Jossie. I think that America has to deal with, and we're not.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a you know, we talked about silence, right?
Right.
The you know, form of, yeah, and that's certainly something that is important. Is that, you know, oftentimes. You know, this Representative Gosar, he can't plead that. John McCain, in his most current...
You don't think he believes that?
his most current personality, he can't claim that because he's very familiar with Native people. You know, it's just that he... I don't know if this is his the real form of his personality. It's like the Lego movie, you know, that good cop, bad cop. You know, he plays he's the same character. that's John McCain. At one point, you know, Native people thought that he was actually a decent person, and now he's not. He's both good cop and bad cop at the same time. But they know, you know, these lawmakers understand that there are real affected and impressive Native people who are affected by these particular forms of legislation. But I think the general population thinks that it's a victimless crime oftentimes when we take Native land. You know, because... Yeah, there are no Native people out there, right? There's, you know, there's five Native people in the whole United States, and so they're not going to be affected by this particular piece of legislation, and so why not slip it through? And then when these outcries come back, when these legal processes come back, when the right to and duty to consultation comes back, they say, oh, apparently there are still Native people out there. And so I think that is absolutely a problem, although I don't think that Gosar or McCain or any of the other fellow lawmakers who voted for this particular provision or against it, you know, they could claim that. They know that there's people. They're just expecting it to slip through unprotested.
And, when I look at this also, Mark Trahan, I look at I said this earlier, but I'll go back to this for a moment, which has to do with the absolute power that some people have in Congress, and who Rio Tinto really is, and the lobbying effort that took place by Rio Tinto, how this actually happened through McCain's office in other places. And they, as I said earlier, I mean, they do have this history, whether it's up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan or whether it took place in Wisconsin in the Flambeau mining that they had their piece in, or whether it took in the What happened in Guinea, in New Guinea, where they destroyed this entire river by dumping toxic waste inside rivers, and the lawsuit took place there. I mean, this is the company that has a track record of making lots of money, but destroying every land it touches, and that doesn't get to be part of the conversation.
Absolutely, and the good thing, and let's look at the positive, is they had to do this in the dark of the night. There's no way politically they could give away this much money to a foreign corporation, and in the public daylight, they would all be called on it. They would be defeated. It would produce consequences. So, in a way, this is kind of their last gasp as more and more things become transparent. I also think there's an opportunity here for the left and the right to come together. This is one where we can reach out to Tea Party because they're going to be just as ticked off about it as we are. It shows that corporatism and favoritism still have a place, and it's time to, I don't think you can ever eliminate it, but you can surely make it public and make it so that there's consequences when people do these kind of actions.
So as we conclude this, Chairman Rambler, could you talk to us again? We started talking about this a moment ago. What your very next steps are going to be? Are you going to? Is there going to be a lawsuit? Are you going to block them in court? What's your next steps this way?
That's an option, and the other thing that we're going to never stop doing is educating the public. That's what we did with Congress. That's what we're going to continue to do with the public. Continue to educate them and let them know what this really, really means. I just want to throw in this before we end is that Bosar and McCain have been saying the tribes have been consulted on this. There's consultation issues. Consultation pauses in there, and there's also we're going to be doing a NEPA next step. But here's what they're not saying. That may be in there, but the law also says that once the NEPA study is published, within 60 days the land will be transferred to Resolution Copper. So that means no matter what they say to us, no matter what we say to them, and no matter what the NEPA study finds, this land is still going to be transferred. So, you know, that's how much they respect us.
Well, this has been a very important conversation for all of our listeners around to hear, because this is the stuff that flies under the radar that we need to bring above the radar and beyond the radar for people to hear. And Chairman Terry Rambler, who's chairman of the San Carlos Apache Nation, thank you so much for joining us, Chairman Rambler. It's good to have you with us. We look forward to talking to you again and staying on top of this with you for our listeners.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Mark Trahan, independent print and media journalist. Always good to have you with us, and we look forward to having you back very soon.
Thanks again.
Always good to talk to you. And my dear friend, Jossie Ross, great to have you with us. And, of course, we'll be linking to all your work on our website as well. Jossie, thanks so much, brother. We'll be talking very soon.
Absolutely. You have a wonderful day, Mark.
You too, man. We are going to take a very brief break and come right back. It's time for the City Paper. Don't go away.
Dedicated to the one I love. Yeah. Still on the way he talks.